You are listening to Cut Gym Newsletter Speaks, the podcast for Wednesday, May 18th, 2022. This is episode 23. JJ Sefton here. And for this episode, it's just going to be me and my colleague and good friend, CBD. CBD, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing fine. You folks are lucky enough to be able to hear our dulcet voices for the entire time, or yeah, the 30 seconds you hear us and then tune out. But that's, you know, that's your call.
Absolutely, absolutely. So anyway, on the tap, we have a number of topics, and today is the day after the primary elections in several states, and the marquee race seems to be that everyone is talking about. First of all, it's all the picks, really, of Donald Trump and what that portends for the MAGA movement vis-a-vis taking over the Republican Party going forward into the elections and then for the midterms and then in 2024. But the marquee race was, of course, the Senate seat in Pennsylvania, where we had a number of candidates, and it sort of boiled down at the end to Mehmet Oz, David McCormick, and an outsider named Kathy Barnett. And so far, as a result of the race, it's a dead heat between Oz and McCormick, and Kathy Barnett has been, unfortunately, she has been eliminated from that race. And it just is, it's a puzzle. We were talking about this before we went on the air. Is Mehmet Oz, to me, is a non-starter. I don't care. I just think he's too close to Oprah Winfrey, and is one thing. It's bad enough. And Oprah Winfrey was the one who saddled us with Barack Obama for 8 years. And also the fact that Oz's statements that are on record, he is anti-gun, and he is also very, very pro-transsexual, transgenderism. And
so don't be unfair. He changed all of that in the last 3 months. He's now an ardent Second Amendment supporter, and he is ardently against the mutilation of children.
Yes, he has evolved.
Yes, I mean, he has evolved.
Actually, a better word is mutated. he's in the sea of people looking at him funny, and he's going, "Oh, I better change my views and look like I'm a conservative." But it's really just what's interesting about this race is, and we'll get to just the smearing of Kathy Barnett, and she's had some interesting positions, but really, she has a very compelling story about being the child of a rape survivor, and her mother did not abort her, and she is, you know, she's come out very strongly against abortion. But really, what puzzles me is, why did Donald Trump support Mehmet Oz in the first place, and why are all of his acolytes, like people like, you know, Rick Grinnell and Ben Carson, are throwing their support behind Oz, and really just. It's a puzzle to me. I can't figure it out.
Well, I think it's certainly part of his ego needs to be stroked. And Oz is an intelligent man, and he stroked Trump's ego. Plus, Oz is in the news. He's a well-known lunatic. Let's be fair. You know, he was a superb physician, a brilliant professor of cardiac surgery. And he decided that wasn't enough. And that he became this new age medicine preacher who touted, you know, the latest and greatest, no matter how insane it might have been. And as I said, he's a bit of a loon. He's also a dual citizen of Turkey and the United States, which I think immediately disqualifies him to be a United States senator. I know that the Supreme Court allowed that beginning in the 70s. It makes no sense to me at all. I think it's a dual loyalty, and we don't need that in the Senate. I'm an ardent Semite. I love Israel. I'm a Zionist. And I'm not sure that I would be happy with a senator who had dual citizenship with Israel, even though I think that Israel is a fine ally and a friend of America. We need to draw the line, and that's one of the lines that I would draw.
Yeah, I agree with you on dual citizenship. On people who are naturalized citizens and have been here for a while, I wouldn't necessarily have a problem with that. Of course, you know, we have Arnold Schwarzenegger, whatever, you know, screw your freedoms, was the governor of California, and well, he was horrible, but again, if you just take that example aside, no, I'm sure there are very fine people who were naturalized and could very well serve. I think there is a proscription against that in the Constitution of at least getting the presidency. I think you have to be an actual Native American citizen. I don't think you can be naturalized. But again, that's kind of, in a way, it's kind of ridiculous, since the founding fathers were all, you know, they weren't Native Americans, they were British citizens. So there you have it. But going back to, you know, to your point about Trump, yeah, it's an ego thing. He, you know, God bless him, he has a very large ego. And you know something? God bless him, he can have a large ego, because he has been a very successful businessman, and he's been incredibly successful president and basically achieving, you know, the economic miracle of miracles almost all by himself. He's had very little help from a Congress, even when the Congress was Republican, and certainly no help when we lost the Congress in the midterms in his first term. But his ability, he picks Oz, I think, because in a way it mirrors his. He has this notion that the celebrity name recognition is going to be helpful, you know, to the cause in dragging the guy over the finish line. Oh, Dr. Oz, he's great, he's wonderful.
Absolutely right. I think that's a big part of it. Problem though is that he didn't look deeply enough into Mehmet Oz's politics. He has a chaotic political philosophy. It's grounded in absolutely nothing. I will not be surprised at all if Oz wins, and I'm not so sure that he's going to win the nomination, but let's say he wins the nomination and he becomes the junior senator from Pennsylvania. It would not surprise me at all if he voted just like Romney, or even worse. You know, he would be a fierce independent, like that knucklehead from Maine and the commie from Vermont. I see nothing in Mehmet Oz that comforts me that he is going to be a conservative in any way, shape, or form.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the whole thing with Kathy Barnett was she was this unknown quantity. And at the beginning, when she started to, you know, when she was really surging, I guess it was a week and a half or maybe 2 weeks ago, she was really threatening to really steal the show there. All of a sudden, you had all these reports about, well, in 2016, she was anti-Trump and so on and so forth. And
you know, something in 2016, I was anti-Trump.
Well, exactly.
Late 2015, I was anti-Trump. I was I was very, very suspicious of him. Things change, but look, getting back to Trump's endorsement of Oz, he would have been much better served had he simply bowed out of that race. He could have said, "We have several staunch conservatives. I think any number of them could be a fine U.S. senator. We need to support the Republican Party. We need to get behind the nominee, blah, 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 blah. Be the political man for once." But he chose not to for the reasons that you've articulated. And I think it's going to bite him in the ass. He has pissed off a fair number of Pennsylvanians because they don't like Oz. He just showed up in Pennsylvania. I think he was born in Pennsylvania, but
yeah, where he now, wound up, I'm not, yeah, probably, I mean, wherever he was, in New York, or I don't know where, he's in New York, I think.
He was at Columbia for years and years and years. Bingo. So he's certainly a child of Pennsylvania, but, you know,
sure.
Carpetbagging is...
Exactly. I just wanted to get just another point about Barnett is that, so there was that whole thing. And yes, I was definitely vehemently anti-Trump and pro-Ted Cruz, you know, until the moment where it was over, the primary was over, Trump won it, and then I was backing him, and I was backing him really more at that point just because of a fear of Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton would have destroyed the country right then and there. In fact, all the stuff that we're witnessing now with essentially what is Obama's third term is Hillary's agenda as well. So there was that, and I too was that, but I was pro-Trump. That's one thing, and you certainly can have your reservations and then turn around. And she's pro Second Amendment. I believe she served in, there was this whole kerfluffle. Yes, she served in the military or as a guardsman, I believe in the National Guard or the Reserves. And everyone was saying, well, she never produced her records or we don't have it. She's lying about it. And finally, whoops, well, she did indeed serve in the Guard. And then there was this supposed leaked information or Twitter, or it was audio that she was supporting Black, or it was Twitter, that she supported Black Lives Matter. And she didn't. We found out that not only did she not support Black Lives Matter, but she was making a point in her Twitter rant, and it was chopped up and edited by certain people.
She was specifically criticizing BLM and
BLM. Right.
It was a hit job, and the fact that Grinnell supported it makes me want to puke.
I know.
I was all for a DeSantis-Grinnell 2024 ticket. No more. That's beyond the pale. He has lost one supporter. Barnett certainly had some missteps. She's a neophyte, and it doesn't surprise me. I wish she had come forward with her military service documents much, much earlier. It would have eased her transition into the national spotlight a lot more.
What happened was, I think it was her campaign manager who got angry that she was being questioned instead of being a pro and saying, look, I have the documents, here's the documents. And so at that point, it was, I think you and I and even Ace was going, uh-oh, something's going on here.
Yeah.
I hope we didn't back the wrong horse. And then sure enough, we did back the right horse. And then Sean Hannity, frickin' 2 days ago, just disgustingly rips into, it does this smear job on her that was horrible. And basically, I think, helped sink her campaign then and there. She might have been able to maybe get to a three-way tie, but after Hannity slimed her, I think it was all over.
Yeah, but Hannity's a whore. Let's face it. He's a celebrity fluffer. And by the way, did you know that he does karate?
Sean Hannity?
Yeah. Who knew?
Karate. Yeah, well, what I mean,
it's amazing how he talks about it all the time. He's a black belt in something.
I think it's
self-aggrandizement, which is a well-known martial art in the United States.
Yes.
The thing about Hannity is that he takes his marching orders from, let's be fair, from the GOP. He does not attack the GOP nearly as much as he should based on his self-proclaimed politics.
He claims
he's an arch conservative, and he isn't. And anybody who can support Oz, and he had Oz on a lot, apparently. He was a full-throated supporter of him. And then going after Barnett, rather, as you said, it's disgusting. We now know his price.
Well, he's constantly having people on, like, you know, Andy McCarthy. You know, and the so-called Ham and Eggers, who are all the great people from the FBI and the DOJ, which are wonderful institutions, except for a couple of people here and there that make the good look bad. Give me a freaking break. I mean, and it's funny. He's supporting Mehmet Oz because he's, you know, supporting Donald Trump. And it was the FBI and the DOJ and these people that Andy McCarthy claimed that are such wonderful public servants are the ones that are persecuting Donald Trump, fabricated the evidence against Donald Trump, and stabbed him in the back and helped the Democrats steal the 2020 election. So I don't know, you know, the dissonance or the disconnect between you know, Hannity and Andy McCarthy and all of these people with that on one hand, and yet at the same token they claim to be such, you know, wonderful supporters of Donald Trump and the Make America Great Again movement is just it's bewildering to me.
Well, they have their blinders on because, if, you know, any rational analysis of the DOJ and the FBI will show you that those people at the top who are scum, anti-freedom, anti-liberty fascists, where do they come from? They came from entry level 20 or 25 or 30 years ago. That is the structure of the FBI. That is the structure of the DOJ. And anyone who denies that is simply a fool. And Hannity is a fool. McCarthy is a fool.
Exactly. Well, anyway, looking forward, though, we now have, well, whoever it's going to be, it'll be Mehmet Oz and, you know, and it's or David McCormick running against, I'm not sure who the, maybe it's, I think, is it Fetterman? And is, I think it's John Fetterman running
Wow, he's a fucking lunatic, too.
He's out of his mind.
He's a hardcore leftist. He looks like a crazy man. He just had a stroke, apparently, which hopefully will hurt him in the polls. And hopefully Pennsylvania will do the right thing and vote him into oblivion. Although, listen, we're going to have McCormick or Oz, and assuming that Pennsylvania does the right thing. And is that good or bad? I guess it could be worse.
Right. Well, I've always, as we all say, it's like, what good is having the seat, you know, when the seat is occupied by someone who will, you know, who will basically reach across the aisle and do the right thing and not support, you know, and support Democrat positions or maybe compromise with them. And instead of going, you know, 99.999 or 100% leftist, they'll go, you know, 80% leftist. But at least we have comedy comity, supposedly, in the Senate and in Congress. And that's useless. I mean, yeah, Kathy Barnett, let's face it, she would have been, could she possibly have turned into a Mia Love or a Renee Elmers? Yes, certainly she could have. We don't know. She's an unknown quantity. But, you know, there was a shot at that. But I tell you, I'd rather take my chances with her because I can almost guarantee you that Mehmet Oz or David McCormick is definitely going to be turning into a Mitt Romney or, you know, at best, a Lamar Alexander. And that ain't much of a bargain either.
Yes, exactly. That's not going to help drag the country back off the
But supposedly, but Trump actually has had, I mean, before this set of elections, which is kind of a mixed bag for him, if you're keeping score and if that really means something, assuming the bulk of his candidates that he's supporting are not like Mehmet Oz, he's had some very good, I think it was 55-0 in Indiana and Ohio last week with his picks, and he's had some other very good picks. I think it was the governor, whoever's running for governor in Pennsylvania is supposedly a solid MAGA candidate and a bunch of others. He lost a few. I think he lost the Ohio governorship, the primary there, to a basically an establishment candidate. But so far, and if these people, and this is the thing we were talking about with as opposed to, you know, Donald Trump, as opposed to a Ron DeSantis being the standard bearer come 2024, we are now getting more candidates who are picking up the mantle of America First, MAGA, and so on and so forth, and are, you know, we now have, we don't, it's not just a handful of candidates here and there who, if they win, can get corrupted by the Mitch McConnells and Kevin McCarthy's and Paul Ryan's that are there that will corrupt them and will kneecap them if they try to push, you know, a conservative agenda. So now we have many more candidates who are coming to the fore. And if a majority or a good sizable chunk of them do win, that will bolster the, I forget the caucus. Let's say it's the conservative caucus or the Make America Great Again caucus, if you will, in the Senate. And it'll make it that much harder, perhaps, for people like McConnell and McCarthy to corrupt. So that is, I think that's a positive sign.
Oh, I agree. The trend is for me at least, it's cautiously optimistic that the country is seeing these get along to go along establishment politicians as what they are, and that is people who are in it for the graft. And yes, Pennsylvania was a problem. Barnett, I think, is still going to be on the national stage. Hopefully she will have a voice. But as you mentioned, there are a bunch of others who are going to help. Cawthorn down in North Carolina lost his the primary, which I think is a good thing because he's simply too chaotic for a rational movement toward conservatism.
I couldn't figure him out at all.
Yeah, I think he's just a loon.
Feel bad for the guy, you know, because he's, you know, can I say the word cripple? Because he's a cripple, but or an amputee or whatever it is. But that's not, you know. That's not neither here nor there. Just like skin color allegedly is neither here nor there, or sexual orientation. But yeah, he was definitely loopy. So it's better that he's one and done, so to speak.
Yeah.
And you know, the similar thing is what we can thank sponge brain soils pants President Biden there for destroying the country in 6 years, really laying waste of the country in just 16 months. That's really opened up a lot of people's eyes to getting to getting great candidates, not only in the GOP, but getting hopefully relatively speaking, more normal candidates in the Democrat Party, or at least causing a rift in the Democratic Party between the full-on Maoists and just the mere Trotskyites. So that disarray is certainly good news. And because a lot of the base is just saying, this ain't us. I mean, the transgenderism and the destroying our jobs, yeah, great, love you, but no, this is not good. So we may not be voting for Republicans, but we certainly are not going to be voting for Democrats, not with all this going on.
And there's a marvelous reminder to these people every single day when they drive down the road and they see gas at $4.79 a gallon, which is what I saw yesterday. It went up 30 cents in one day in my neck of the woods.
This is the ninth straight day of record gasoline prices. I mean, this is. I'm looking at it as what, 5.6, 5.70 or something, wherever it is. It's like this is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, cut you off.
No. It's a daily reminder to the American people that Biden is a destructive man and his policies are destructive, and every single day that gas price smacks him in the face. And it's a cruel thing to say, but it's a good thing that people are reminded of it. The problem, of course, is that prices are going through the roof, because it's not just gasoline, because it's diesel fuel, and diesel fuel runs America, as people have been saying for the last couple of weeks. Duh. And diesel is unbelievable. It's over $6 a gallon where I live, which...
Yeah, diesel is usually like half the price of regular gas.
A little bit less, depending on the mixes that they're making, seasonal mixes.
You know, and again, as we keep saying, it's not only fuel, but everything that we eat, wear, consume, or otherwise are in contact with us, virtually everything is either made from or requires some form of petrochemical in order to be produced. And so forget about even getting it to market. It's even producing it in the first place. And so this is definitely not good. And plus the fact of this whole thing with baby formula. Now all of a sudden children are going to be starving. And the real killer diller of this whole thing, we find out that whatever baby formula is available is being shipped to illegal immigrants. So people are just, I mean, I can't see anyone. I don't care. Look, I don't care if you could be voting for Democrat for year after year after year. If you see this on a daily basis, if you see that kind of thing happening, you could be voting for Democrat forever and ever. But if you see that, that's going to hit you in the face saying, what are these people doing?
Absolutely. And this is the saving grace. And that is that the Democrat Party is misstepping chaotically. They have no idea what they are doing. They have been so insulated from the reality of America for so long that they think it's okay to do what they are doing. And they're making very, very public mistakes. And they're affecting people who would normally not be affected. You know, the working mom who uses formula which is perfectly okay with me. You know, this breastfeeding mania in this country is just nuts. So anyway, the working mom who uses formula so that she can continue to work, I think is usually not going to be the hyper-political person like you and I would be. And all of a sudden, she can't get formula. She goes down to the local drugstore and it's not there. Well, who's she going to blame? She's not going to blame Donald Trump. She's going to blame the senile old fuck in the White House. And you know something? It is his fault. And come November, it's going to bite him in the ass. And it's going to be a wonderful thing to see.
We hope so. This is, of course, as we say, our Chinese Democrat political pollster, Dao Min Yen, notwithstanding, hopefully, the shenanigans. And again, it was the downside is, yeah, they've got the cheat machine, I'm sure, revved and ready to go everywhere and anywhere. But at the same token, they surely had that in Virginia when Glenn Youngkin was going up against Terry McAuliffe. And that is a marquee race for sure in America. And when McAuliffe was shit-canned, and we had Youngkin and this really nice lieutenant governor, Winsome Sears.
Yeah.
When she's terrific. When they came in and when they swept the legislature, that was, you know, this is right in Virginia. This is Washington, D.C.'s, you know, backyard right there. So the fact that they weren't able to steal that, even though I'm sure they tried, that portends well. It means we really now have to overcome the cheat factor. But I think people are so motivated come November that I really can't see the Democrats retaining the House or the Senate. I just can't.
I agree. It's not gonna happen. I'm not planning on some monstrous, supermajority in each House. That's not going to happen. But I think that I haven't been a real Republican many, many years. But no. The Republican Party will retake both. You know, you're talking about Virginia. The lieutenant governor, a black Republican woman, might be the most galling part of that election for the Democrats. How dare she leave the reservation? How dare she leave the plantation? What is going on in America that a black woman can be a Republican? That's just shocking.
And the way people like Winsome Sears and, of course, Clarence Thomas are just so horribly, horribly slimed. And beyond that, it's part and parcel with, if you look at some of the verbiage that leftists, white leftists in particular, always talk about, it's so condescending and patronizing that black people, that Hispanics, that whoever, you see, they're coming for me already, the disinformation police. I'll let that go by. But anyway, it's galling and really disgusting how the language is, well, you can't do anything unless you have our help to do that. You'd be nowhere without white liberals showing you what to do. You're too stupid, you know, to make up your own choices for yourself. And I hope, of course, Clarence Thomas said that so eloquently when he was being, high-tech lynched during his confirmation hearings, that, you know, again, you know, it's for uppity blacks who want to think for themselves. That's exactly what it's all about. And, you know, you get a few cracks like that, and then, you know, black support for Democrats just absolutely craters when they see what's been done to them over the past, forget about just, you know, slavery and Jim Crow, which was Democrat institutions, but post the Great Society, which kept them in cultural and societal chains for the last 70 years. You know, the big deal is abortion now. It's, you know, if it were not for Roe versus Wade, the irony is that black Americans would be like something on the order of over 30% of the U.S. population. Today, because of Roe versus Wade and mass abortion, blacks are at, I think, about 16 or 17% of the population and dropping fast.
Well, they're even less.
Even less.
I think it's about 12 or 13%. I'm not sure that black America would have grown that much.
But it would have definitely grown,
but
sure.
But it certainly would have grown. The insult to men like Clarence Thomas is the height of pomposity and the height of arrogance on the part of the left. And it works for them, not as much with black America now, but it certainly works with their liberal counterparts. The hard left knows very well how to create, I'm trying to think of a good word, pain, I guess.
Black America has been totally, and it's genocide. The policy, the leftist policies that just, we talked about this before, but still, it's always worth bringing up. The leftist policies that kept them in literal in figurative chains to Uncle Sugar, to the government, destroyed the black family, destroyed their independence, made them dependent on the welfare state, you know, fatherless homes, which led to crime, and all of this endless cycle of pain and early death and drug abuse and alcohol abuse and so on and so forth. And ironically, it bred this culture it allowed the notion of perpetual victimhood to creep in. And it's always a recurring theme in black music, in black films, and so on and so forth, saying that black people can never get ahead. And it's taught, these kind of concepts are actually taught in universities. This is where you get this notion of structural racism, that no matter what we do, black people can never get ahead. And so there's no making it. So what they do is, that's why when black students, kids, try to do well in school or study, they are put upon by their, friends and their peers as what, you're acting white. What are you acting white for? And so that whole pressure, and it's horrible. It's just, that is so insidious about this whole thing. And it's just a tragedy.
And that's the brilliance of Trump, that he looked at our economy and thought, well, what's the best way to raise all boats? And that is leave America alone. And what happened? He simply took the cuffs off of our economy and black employment exploded. Amazing, isn't it? So this subculture in America that has been failing for three or four generations, all of a sudden, a president comes in and says, yeah, look at that, jobs. You want them? And they said, yes, we want them. That's the answer. Is it going to fix black America in a generation? No. It will take generations to undo the damage that began, God, with Wilson, really. Yeah. But of course, LBJ's Great Society was the knife in the heart of black America. Yeah. But simply providing opportunity in the form of jobs has done so much. And Biden, cleverly, because he is a sleazy leftist, understood that and killed it.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
Absolutely. It's what a tragedy, on every level. But as you say, it will take a long time to bring it back. But it will come back. It can, or let's just say it can come back under the right circumstances. And right now, the destruction is so fast and so far and hitting so many people across cultural, across all lines, except for the ultra, ultra wealthy, which, let's face it, the majority of them are leftists. But it's hitting so many people and affecting so many people so horribly, and we have yet to touch bottom. This is the big fear that with stagflation and with shortages of fuel and the whole rolling blackout thing that's coming to New York and other places that are, leftist hellholes. That's going to that has and will open a lot of eyes, as it will for the election. And hopefully it not only just opens eyes for one election or two election cycles, but finally it gets through to people's heads that, man, if you vote Democrat and you vote leftist, you are voting for your own destruction. And if that sinks in, if that message is clear and converts people, whatever the issues they may think of on a personal, social issues or whatever you might want to call it, but on the economic issues alone of the survival of yourself and your family and your prosperity, if that alone sinks in, it is definitely going to be a sea change in American politics. Hopefully, we survive long enough to see the fruits of that going forward.
I agree completely. And at the risk of beating this dead horse, it is the missteps of the Democrat Party that is giving us the opportunity to shift, to push the Overton window back toward some semblance of sanity. They are making such obvious political mistakes, public political mistakes, and they simply don't care. And they simply don't understand, more than they don't care, what they are doing. And that is a great, great thing for the future prospects of America.
We will take a break. Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast. CBD, J.J. Sefton, back in a flash. Stay tuned. And we're back, CBP, J.J. Sefton. Before the break, we were going to segue into the next story, which is our wonderful president, as I call him, sponge brain shits pants, Biden, basically just blood libeling half of the nation and about this Buffalo shooting. Incredible.
It is amazing. I think it took him 30 seconds before he took shots at half the country. He began to jabber about replacement theory, which was part of the manifesto of this fucking idiot who killed 10 people in Buffalo. The guy was a fascist in the true sense of the word, and he was absolutely a leftist. And yet the mainstream media has allowed this bald-faced lie to emerge from the White House that he was in some way a right-wing terrorist. What was the term? A white supremacist.
Yeah,
he was a white supremacist. He was also a leftist supremacist. I'm not sure which is worse, probably the leftist part.
One of our commenters had a really great line for it. He didn't call him a white supremacist. He called him a white Stalinist, and that's perfect. From now on, I am using
that. Oh, absolutely. That's a great one.
White Stalinist. Yeah. I mean, we know it. I mean, he's look, you have to be really completely nuts to go in and shoot anybody. You got to be out of your mind, but to go in and just shoot people at random, regardless of whatever. But rhetoric does kill. And when you talk about rhetoric, let's look at the rhetoric over the years. That we just had several mass shootings and a ramming attack at the Waukesha, or as you call it, Waukesha Christmas parade. And this is, we had a subway shooting in the Brooklyn 36th Street Station where a guy went off his rocker,
a gun.
Right,
a gun went off, and yes. And an SUV.
Right, exactly.
Those
so, it's amazing how things become self-aware. These inanimate objects somehow start themselves up and run people down or shoot people. But this guy, this is just, you know, this shooter. The fact that they just they slime Tucker Carlson with this because of his rhetoric talking about what he talks about all the time, and it's true. And we just talked about this in the last segment in a way, or touched upon it. As Black Americans and as others either are, you know, killed off because of killed with the kindness of liberal policies, the Democratic Party has to replace all of these victims that they've created. So what do? They do open the borders. What they cannot do electorally, they just, you know, with the population that they have, you know, if they're not voting right, they just replace them with people from out of the country who don't speak the language, who don't assimilate, and they give them voter cards and everything else, and they will vote Democrat. So there is replacement going on, in fact. That is what open borders is all about. Whether it's a theory, however this psycho phrased it in his manifesto, that's one thing, but it is happening. But beyond that, to blame this on white supremacists is just ridiculous. And to blame it on not white supremacists or white Stalinists, I should say, but to blame it on Republicans is beyond the pale. Absolutely beyond the pale. But that's what they have. That's all they have right now, because they're losing everything. When Roe versus Wade that leak didn't energize the base and move the needle, they go to the old standby, which is the race card. When a gun goes off, blame white people, blame Republicans.
You know, I contrast the Sinalo fool's viciousness yesterday in Buffalo to President Trump's visit to the hospital outside of Pittsburgh. After the synagogue shooting. And his kindness and his sensitivity was on full display. Also his wife's. Also 5-inch heels.
A lot of kindness on display there, I must say. But Melania's never going to forget.
And he did not politicize it. What he did was showed that he actually did care about the people who died and were wounded. And he cared about Americans. And that is such a wonderful contrast between what a president should be and what we have today.
Yeah, what the left does is they use corpses as both as just props, as political props. They could care less. If they really cared, how many people died in Chicago this weekend or were killed by gunfire, black on black, 40, 50, 60, and multiply that by every blue leftist shithole in the country. It's dozens, scores of black youths killing each other, scores of Latino youths killing each other, knives, guns, bullets, drugs, whatever you name it. It's got to be into the thousands. There's the genocide. There's the real where black lives supposedly matter. But they don't give a damn because it doesn't further their, not only does it not further their political agenda, it actually damns them. Because if you look at the reasons why black people and Latinos and poor people are killing each other, it's because of the policies of those Democrat places that keep them in rhetorical chains to the government. And that's what's killing them. That is it.
I wonder if part of the reaction of black America to the Democrat lunacy of the last year or so has been a growing realization that they are going to be marginalized just like every other formerly useful minority. You know, the Jews used to be the wonderful tool of the Democrat Party, but as as Jews became a smaller part of the population, they became less important. Arabs became ascendant. And now blacks are being pushed out by the new minority of the day, which is, you know, the transgenders and the, you know, the 57 genders and so on and so forth. Perhaps that is going to push black America away from their 99% voting record for the Democrat Party. And let's face it, they're not, it's not going to be a majority conservative vote for many, many generations, no. If it ever would be. But that, you know, 5 or 10% is all America needs to you know, kick it back to red America.
Well, that's why, and hence why this whole thing of replacement theory, I don't like to forget about even that, but that's why you have open borders, because you need to, yeah. If you can get, we already have something like, 11 million is bullshit. You already have at least 30 million illegal aliens still in this country and that have been here for years and years. You open the border now with the end of Title 42. It is over, baby. You are going to see millions and millions and millions, and you will replace this country with something that you will return America into a Latin American country. Essentially, that is what you will do with white people, with very, very ultra rich white people at the top. So essentially, you're going to get another Mexico, which we talked about last time with I think Michael Walsh. It's this whole thing where you have European people controlling the mass of underclass poor mestizos, and it's going to be the same thing here essentially. But
and if you want to see racism, go to Mexico.
The really sick irony of this whole thing is that America, look, nobody's perfect. People are people. Human beings are human beings. But I would say that America is probably the least racist society on the planet, and that probably ever has been, even with everything. It, you know, people say, well, you had slaves. Yeah, well, America existed for only 80 years. We did away with slavery. Britain was existing for, a couple of thousand years before they abolished slavery? The Middle East, Middle Eastern countries still have African slaves, and nobody wants to talk about that, which is where the slave trade really originated from. It is Muslims who did this, but of course, you know, don't say that, because that would be Islamophobic. Yeah, this is what is happening, and I'm sort of losing my train of thought here for a second, but going back to what...
Well, join the club. I lost it a long time ago.
No, but what you were talking about with black people becoming angry and realizing what the Democratic Party is doing to them, when you flood the zone with a whole new and you're sort of discarded as yesterday's news, yeah, they're going to get angry. I just remember what I wanted to say. And believe me, I am no fan of him at all, but this guy who's Hawk Newsom, who was the Black Lives Matter leader in New York, a number of weeks ago, he went off on a rant against Democrats. He sort of recognized what we were talking about, that the Democrats are taking them for granted, taking black people for granted, and not giving a shit about them. Yeah, half the rest of the conversation was anti-white, anti-this, anti-that, but at least even with someone like him, who is so out of his mind on racialism, even he notices that, you know, that the Democrat Party is just using them as a political, you know, for political advantage in the elections, and not really going to give a damn about them come, you know, after they allegedly or supposedly will win, and which is really historically what it's always been. They need black people every 2 years, 2 to 4 years, to vote in the elections and to help them rig the elections, so to speak, in certain places. But they need them to vote for them, to put them in the office, to give them the walk around money. They shout racism, racism, racism. You know, we'll take care of you. We'll do this. We'll do that. And once the election is over, kids are killing each other. The gangbangers are going crazy. Drug overdose, misery, poverty, and so on and so forth. Lather, rinse, repeat every 2 years. So even he saw it. So for what it's worth.
Well, I think that was probably a political calculation more than anything else. Just
yeah. But, you know, it might have been a political calculation on his part. But for him to say it, people
who
may
not... public.
Right,
exactly.
To make it public
is a sea change. And,
right, people who don't realize that he's doing that as a political ploy will take his words literally and say, yeah, man, maybe Mr. Biden and the Democrats really don't give a shit about us, and maybe we should do something different, at least stay home. So.
A new development in the last couple of days. Elon Musk wants to know how many of their Twitter, whatever they call them, members are actually bots, which is an AI-driven or, you know, just simply a fake account.
Fake follower, yeah.
Yeah, and their analysis discovered that Joe Biden's followers are about half bots, which I thought was quite interesting.
Yeah, well, it goes hand in hand with his 82 million votes. About half of them are not real.
Yeah, or as I say, that's probably a pretty good, right. pretty good ratio. Yeah.
82 million votes cast by about 800 people. But there you go.
So it was interesting, though, and Musk is putting his acquisition on hold until this audit is complete, which I think is very interesting. And I was having a chat with Jay Guevara, one of the open bloggers on Ace of Spades, and he asked if Musk's whole plan was not to purchase Twitter, but to blow it up. Because let's face it, Elon Musk knows damn well how many bots there are running Twitter. He has the answer before he asks the question. So is that his plan? Just to destroy Twitter with this, you know, to delegitimize it in the eyes of America. I like that idea. I don't know if it's true, but I love the idea.
Oh, yeah, I could live with that. That's not a problem. Yeah. Twitter, I mean, on the one hand, people say, you know, Twitter's a sewer. Nobody really follows Twitter. But Twitter is pretty freaking, it is influential. I mean, theoretically, it is influential. If not even, as we say, with Biden's, phony bots, it means everybody's got all of these so-called popular. How many of Obama's followers are phonies? How many of you name the leftist that's supposedly got millions and millions of followers? How many of them are real? And how many are totally made up? So yeah, blow Twitter up. Well, who gives a damn? Let it go. At least then it's also a nice little realization that social media ain't. You know, it's not what it's cracked up to be. And if people see that realization, that's pretty damn good right there. I'll take it. Sure.
The problem with Twitter is not that it has tremendous influence with the American people. The problem is that it has tremendous influence among the media that pay more attention to Twitter than the American people. So you have these reporters who claim to be doing original research, which is simply reading tweets all day. Maybe that's unfair. I know that Ace on Ace of Spades beats that idea to death, and I love it every time he criticizes them for, you know, the idea of real reporting is going on Twitter and sending snarky tweets.
His favorite target is like Jake Tapper.
Musk's attempt to get this audit complete is to decrease the number of customers that Twitter is reporting, therefore decreasing their possible revenue in the future. So that's probably a pretty smart financial decision on his part.
Absolutely. And again, if it plants seeds of doubt in people's minds as to the reality of not only Twitter, but of the reality of Facebook, the reality of TikTok, the reality of, you know, whatever the hell is out there, so much the better. I mean, it's healthier if people just got the hell off of socialist media and just engaged their brains in real discourse. Yeah, I'll take it. If it knocks them down one notch, and it's a big notch, I'll take it. It's a victory to me.
Absolutely. So it's tangentially to Twitter is the propaganda war being fought between Ukraine and Russia. I think it's fascinating. Ukraine's winning it, obviously. They're better at it. Russia is ham-handed. And I'm not really sure I understand why they're doing such a bad job of it. But it doesn't matter. The fact is that Ukraine is winning, not on the battlefield. I think they're holding their own on the battlefield for many, many reasons. You know, Russian conscripts being sent a couple of thousand miles into Ukraine thinking, why am I here, is not a good way to conduct a war. And Ukraine is fighting for its own soil, and that is an important thing in war.
Good.
I'm sorry, but the problem is that NATO is involving itself to a great extent, to much too great extent, in the Ukraine war. And, Finland and Sweden entering NATO, and I think that's an unnecessary provocation. That doesn't need to be done now. It can be done in 5 years when this war is over. And even worse than that are the war drums being beaten in the United States. These neocons need to be voted out of office. The idea that a U.S. senator would advocate for war absent any, and let's face it, there is no strategic need for us to get involved in the war in Ukraine. It is simply not that important. Is it an emotional topic? Yes. Is it a moral topic? Yes. But sending American troops and American treasure to Ukraine is a crime, and it should not happen. Let's face it, we have people in Ukraine. I mean, the idea that our advisors are not fighting is ludicrous. It happened in Vietnam. It's happening all over the world, and we don't need to be in Ukraine.
The reason that Zelensky is winning and Ukraine is winning the propaganda war, if you will, number one, first of all, Putin, anyone invading a country like that, it's just, you know, it's Putin invading the country. Russia invades Ukraine, you know, this big superpower with this theoretically small country next to it. That doesn't look good just right there. That's number one. And it is, and it's horrible. It's just aggressive war. Whatever the reason being, as we talked about it from historical perspective, it's horrible and it's inexcusable in this day and age, number one. But beyond that, the reason that they're winning it is because the powers that be, that the globalists and the left in this country associate Vladimir Putin with Donald Trump. That's number one. So it's a no-brainer there on their point. They could look at Vladimir Putin and say, I wouldn't be surprised at some point, and I'm shocked that they haven't done it already, Donald Trump is secretly talking with Vladimir Putin and plotting against the Ukraine because Donald Trump is pissed off that his plots, you know, that his graft was exposed in the Ukraine, as opposed to we have, you know, Hunter Biden's laptop, which proves the exact opposite. So just like we have, you know, a white supremacist, a racist shooter, gunning black people down, or a black guy gunning black people down as a white supremacist, you know, the other white meat, so to speak. Yeah, Donald Trump is the one that's behind all of this. So that's, by equating Trump and Putin, that's a no-brainer. That's easy peasy to do that. The dangerous thing, though, unfortunately, sadly, and crazy, is that because we helped them early on, he was going for a coup de main, so to speak, when he first invaded. He thought he was going to somehow send his shock troops into Kiev by airplane, drop in, take out Zelensky, take out the government, and boom, it would all be over in 48 hours. But when those planes got shot down, that wasn't just a lucky shot. We gave them the intelligence. Our FCIA and DOD or whoever it is locked them in, honed them in, and they took out those Russian paratroopers. And from there, their entire invasion plan went to shit. Plus, they have horrible generalship. Their military equipment ain't so great. You know, they have probably lackluster morale in their own ranks. And again, as you said, CBD, they're fighting for their own survival. So all of these things have led to, and I called it a quagmire in week number one and said, oh, come on, JJ, it's not a quagmire. Here we are, like nearly 2 months later. It's a quagmire. It's really a stalemate. And the problem with Putin is he's cornered. And he's got 6,000 nuclear weapons. Will he use nukes? Hey, who the heck knows? Would that be on the realm of possibility that even a suitcase nuke or a low-yield nuclear weapon could be used there? Or, God forbid, somewhere on our continent to blow up some sort of infrastructure? Yeah, that could happen. This guy's desperate, and it comes from that school of being a former KGB agent who thought that the fall of the Soviet Union was a catastrophe and wants to reconstitute Russia. And he sees, you know, that we discussed him with Michael Walsh, the gloating that we did, that, you know, we beat you in the Cold War, you know, that certainly sticks in his craw. And this should not be, we should not be doing this. This is, you know, the other reason that it's going on is we're wagging the dog. We're trying to distract from the disaster that is happening caused by Joe Biden and his ilk here in this country. So he needs a convenient war to distract from the destruction going on here. So that's, all of this is a perfect storm of absolute disaster. And anybody who is rooting for U.S. troops to be on there and actively shooting is out of their minds. And yes, we do have people behind the scenes.
Yes, we have the dregs of the neocons who are cheering for a glorious Ukrainian victory supported by American blood and American treasure. And I just said it's disgusting, and it's certainly untenable too, because the American people do not want a war in Ukraine. The thing is, though, that it's rapidly disappearing from the news because people simply don't care. And once again, this is, I'm bringing it back to the chaotic mistakes of the Democrat Party. They have $6 gasoline out there, $5 gasoline out there. They have ridiculous inflation. They have moms who can't get formula. You really think those people are going to give a shit about Ukraine? The answer is no, they don't. And all they're going to hear is, oh, we're sending $40 billion to Ukraine. Are we sending them baby formula too?
Yeah, definitely. You know, what's really galling is that along with the neocons, irony of ironies, the biggest voices calling for war are, surprise, surprise, it's the Democrats, who not 20 years ago were up in arms that Bush lied, no blood for oil, you know, Bush lied and people died. What are we doing in Iraq? What are we doing there? We had this Cindy Sheehan, who was this, you know, this poor mother whose son, Casey, I think his name was killed in Iraq, and I feel bad for him. And in a way, I feel bad for Cindy Sheehan, but she allowed herself to be used as a political tool to wave her son's bloody uniform. You know, the same Vietnam protesters who blew up recruiting stations and, you know, the weathermen blowing things up. The weathermen are still blowing things up. You know, they're now the ones who are screaming loudest that we should be sending our blood and treasure to go fight for Zelensky. And I'm going, boy, is this a turn of events. This is just the anti-war party, my ass. These are the most bloodthirsty party you can imagine. Yeah, it was flower power. Yeah, of course, Jane Fonda sitting on an anti-aircraft gun in North Vietnam while our servicemen were being tortured at the Hanoi Hilton. Total crock of shit. And that's something that really is painful for me to come to a realization that these same people who are now screaming for war on the left, on the side of the left, man, you know, they were right 30 years ago that all of this is just to keep the defense contractors fat and happy and their portfolios big. It's just endless wars for profit. And you know something? They're right. But it's really funny that now the shoe is on the other foot. They're screaming for war. So I'm just beside myself with this whole thing.
Well, to make it even worse, we're expanding into Somalia again.
I saw
because
that.
It worked out so well the first time. The thing is that, we're going to send troops to Somalia, and the rules of engagement are going to be just as pathetic, and hopefully not, but possibly more of our men will die. And this is the crime of the military-industrial complex. Endless wars, you got to keep the bottom line nice, fat. Why is it that we don't have a draft? Because that would make it much, much more uncomfortable for the soccer moms and for the neocons who see, oh, look, the poor Ukrainians are being beaten up by the Russians. Let's send troops. Well, no, if it's your kid who's going, you'll feel a lot different about that.
You know, they're always crying about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Well, guess what? Let's have some diversity. Let's do away with student deferments, and let's get all these young kids who are the sons and daughters of, Joe Biden or Nancy Pelosi or you name it, but Lindsey Graham, if he actually has progeny, which I doubt it.
Oh, I doubt very much that he has progeny.
Or Mitt Romney's kids or whoever. Screw their frickin' deferments. Let's get them in uniform, you know, and get out there on the front lines, my friends. You want to kill Putin and kill Russians? You first, my friend. You know, it's funny. We had we were talking about this. I think Buck Throckmorton was it Buck or Joe Mannix? I forgot. One of them today. Let me look at my notes because I don't want to give no credit where the credit is not due.
Well, just give me the credit. It's fine.
Here, I'll give you. Oh no, it's Joe Mannix, our friend Joe. He had it. We were talking about it. This whole his rant today was about the military-industrial complex, and it was Dwight D. Eisenhower whose famous address, farewell address, when he left, when Kennedy assumed office, was to warn us of this military-industrial complex. Let me see if I can find it.
Wait a second. I wrote about that yesterday on Ace of Spades.
Right, and I wrote about it. Well, Michael Walsh, yeah. I quoted because he had it a couple of days ago.
No,
so.
I think Mannix was talking about the extension of the military-industrial complex into the academic scientific complex, which he pointed out today or this morning on Ace of Spades, that it was in some ways more dangerous.
And what's really crazy is that, and this touches on another subject, the invasion of our academy, not just with leftists, but in the STEM areas and in the really crucial areas, by Chinese agents of the Chinese government.
Okay, folks, you have to stop right here, go back to Ace of Spades and read my rant on Tuesday morning. This is what I wrote about. Except it's stealing my stuff.
It's not stealing it. I'm fortifying. Yeah, that's it. I'm fortifying our podcast. Hey, look, you're here. You get the credit for it. I mean, but it's true. It's like there is this rooting for for perpetual war. This is not like World War II, where you have an enemy, you go in, it's unconditional surrender, we stomp the living shit out of you, we denazify you, and we impose our will on you, and whatever it takes, and we'll do that. And the only reason we did that was Hitler declared war on us, and the Japanese bombed us and declared war on us. So if that's what it took to defeat them, we weren't going to just sort of, you know, do this pussyfooting around. But the thing is with Russia is that, you know, again, as I said, we're not going in. This is not like going into Grenada, or it's not like going into into Iraq. This is Russia with 6,000 freaking nuclear weapons. What the actual fuck are we thinking? Stop right here. What are we thinking? I cannot even, you know, and the whole military-industrial complex thing aside, I mean, people are just—they're out of their minds. To anybody who wants to have a war. To have a war for the sake of having a war, like we did with Afghanistan, whatever happened with 9/11 aside, we just did, you know, W did the whole, you know, nonsense about that. We should have, I mean, Mark Levin, I don't know where he is today, but in the very beginning, he said we should have took the tops off of those mountains in Tora Bora, or as I wanted to do, you know something? This is a war with Islam. What we should have done was we should have dropped a nuke
on Mecca and Medina.
Well, I wouldn't do Mecca. I go Medina first, and he goes, you one more time, and we're going for Mecca. Or you just drop it on Mecca and say, to hell with you people. But, you know, I sound horrible, but that's what it is. You know, but they didn't do that because right from the beginning, W said, Islam, we are not at war with Islam.
And it's a religion of peace.
Religion of peace. And the whole thing is the war on terror. We're at war with terror. Where is terror? I know we're Terra, T-E-R-R-A.
Terror right now is on the south side of Chicago and
the baddest part of town. Exactly.
East St. Louis.
Exactly. East
Let's
St.
Pay
Louis.
To America.
All we did was we spent 20 years of blood and treasure and then, you know, giving billions of dollars to this Hamid Karzai and his cockamamie country with nothing, all graft and grift. And then at the end of the day, I don't know, Trump, I guess, was trying to do something, trying to withdraw us there rationally and logically.
And being lied to by the Joint Chiefs.
Being lied to by the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Absolutely. He was being suckered by them. And then when Biden comes in, what do we do? Okay, we're leaving. Goodbye. Oh, and here's $80 billion worth of military hardware for you nice Taliban to and we hope you'll be nice to women and let them continue their education and bring back maybe that one Jew who was forced to leave. So, I mean, it's just... This is just so bloody infuriating.
You know, you mentioned something earlier about a quagmire.
Yep.
And yes, Ukraine could easily become a quagmire for Russia. The problem is, and I think somebody mentioned this on Ace of Spades yesterday, is that Russia does quagmires pretty well. They handled it rather effectively in World War II, and they were in Afghanistan for a long time. They don't mind losing lots of men and lots of treasure. It doesn't bother them that much.
Yeah, but the thing is, in Afghanistan, they lost lots of blood and treasure. But for what? Eventually, within a couple of years, they lost their country. The government collapsed and the Soviet Union collapsed. When the Nazis invaded them, it was an existential threat. The Nazis were out to not only wipe out every Jew on the planet, but every Russian as well. I mean, so they definitely fought because they were fighting. It was for their own existence. But
in case not everyone knows about this, what Sefton said about wiping out every Russian is quite true. The final solution, of course, was primarily the Jews. But after the Jews, he was going to move on to the Slavic races. I think was his phrase.
Yeah, Poles, Russians, Slavs, Gypsies, well, everything. We've been, you know, and even then, and after that, he was probably going to go after the Catholics. That was another one.
Yeah.
But in any event, this whole thing in Russia just stinks to high heaven, and it's just and no one's. You're right, CBD. I mean, I see it now. I mean, for the last 6 or 7 weeks until Roe versus Wade, the lead thing was I had at least 10, 15, sometimes 20 articles, 20 links. About the Russia and Ukraine war. Now, all of a sudden, I think today we had maybe three of them or four of them. And Roe v. Wade was huge. Now Roe v. Wade is shrinking, and now it's the shootings in Buffalo and the shooting we don't talk about, which is the one in California at the California church where, you know, a Chinese guy opened up on his congregants. And the reason there was an article that Joe Biden doesn't want to talk about that, not only because of it doesn't further, you know, advance the liberal, the leftist agenda, but he doesn't want to piss off the red Chinese to talk about this. So that's enough. Someone had postulated that. Anyway, let's take a little bit of a break. We're very long. We'll come back and we'll have probably one more segment. Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, back in a moment. And we're back. JJ Seft at CBD with Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast. This is our final segment. We're going to go back to everyone's favorite, Chinese COVID, the General Tso's sickness, and how we were totally bamboozled by this from the New York Post yesterday from Peter Van Buren after being swindled and fooled. Will we learn from our COVID failures? I doubt it. That's me. Anyway, we were swindled, fooled, bamboozled, and lied to during the pandemic. The public health establishment misled the American people about the value of masking, closures, and social distancing. No one has accepted blame. Understanding how badly we failed is not only an inevitable part of the told-you-so process, but more important, a lesson for next time. Just ask the Swedes. Sweden had zero excess deaths associated with COVID. The U.S. had the most excess deaths of all nations. New York had more than Florida. That's the whole story right there in a handful of words. And, you know, that's true. Essentially, everything we did during this entire this is me talking now. Everything we did in these past 2.5 years, or I should say 2 weeks, which is now 2 weeks plus, which is because we still technically have the 2 weeks, was completely wrong. And Sweden did nothing. They didn't lock anybody down. They didn't force anybody to wear masks, didn't force anybody to get vaccinated. And their excess deaths are essentially, about on par with what we would have had. So what does this mean? It means basically COVID-19, give or take, did not add to the number of deaths that normally would have happened had there not been COVID-19 around the world. And yes, people did die from it, and people did get sick from it, like you, CBD, mostly because of the fucking malfeasance and the intentional screwing around with therapeutic drugs and so forth, and the politicization of the disease for nefarious purposes. But in general, it was not necessarily that big of a deal.
As a segue, I'm reading an article on the Epoch Times, and the title is Young Pfizer COVID-19 Vaccine Recipients More Likely to Get Infected After 5 Months, which is fascinating to me. So 12 to 15-year-olds got the second of the two-dose primary regimen. The effectiveness dropped from 60-something percent down to 20% at month two and to zero at month five. And after that, it actually got worse. So they were more likely to be infected after 5 months. This is an obvious failing of the CDC. This is an obvious failing of our health establishment. This is an obvious failing of our political masters who decided that this should be pushed into the public sphere without any rational research being done about it. They should have waited for 2 or 3 years, done the epidemiological research, and then rolled out these vaccines for people other than the highest risk people, which is, old, diabetic, obese people. But for all the reasons that we have been beating to death over the last 2 years, I'm getting all pissed off now.
It's a crime.
It is a crime against humanity. What they have done to America, what they have done to the world is disgusting, and they need to go to jail. Starting with that fucking little midget, Fauci.
He should, certain people jail. Certain people should be really, you could make a case for the death penalty, because if you treated this like a war crime, because it was in a way a war crime. What's the war? Well, the people who overthrew the country and the globalists. But if it were a war, they would be put in the dock, and they caused the deaths of tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people needlessly. And just to backtrack, CBD, you were saying, what they should have done was, put this on a track for trials over 3 years. And again, by the time you put the thing on trial for 3 years, COVID is like it is now. It doesn't exist in the environment anymore. It's just mutated into these other forms, which the original vaccine, I don't think is going to even, can't even address. It's to get injected now with this thing for whatever the form of the disease now is completely useless. It's like going for a flu shot in 2022 with the same serum that was around for 1973. What fucking good
obviously,
is it?
Obviously they're going to redo the vaccines for the current genome of the virus. And that makes a certain amount of sense, and I get that. But the thing is that they're ignoring the science behind it. They're ignoring medical technology, medical science behind all of these things. You know, you talked about what is it called? The two drugs that HCQ and ivermectin.
Yeah.
You know, it looks like HCQ and ivermectin aren't all that wonderful, but the thing is that they were perfectly safe drugs that have been in use for decades. So the fear of some, you know, horrible reaction that's going to kill millions of people because we're trying this untested drug was simply crap.
Yeah.
The problem is that they are using untested drugs, these new, improved, and extraordinarily expensive therapeutics that really aren't all that good. The one that I took when I was in the hospital, the data show that it isn't all that wonderful. It happened to work for me very, very well. Whether that was coincidence or actual efficacy, I have no idea. But the problem is that they are looking at data and manipulating that data for their own financial and political ends.
Well, that's Fauci and Daszak. I think it was revealed that they, how many hundreds of millions of dollars did they get? Or
$350 million paid out to NIH. People. And they're hiding most of it.
Right. And they're getting in a huff. Why do you want to see this? Who are you to look at our financial? And I'm going, this is crazy. But backtracking to what you were saying about the efficacy and the trials of these vaccines, I forget which one it was, but maybe within the last 15 years, there was an outbreak of whether it was SARS or MERS or one of these viruses. I think it was Johnson & Johnson. They brought out a vaccine very quickly. And after, I believe, maybe 40, was it 40 people? 40, 4-0, 40 people died or had severe reactions. They pulled the vaccine. They pulled the entire vaccine and never used it again at all. Can't have it. Meanwhile, we have, it's the VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. All over the world, we are seeing deaths and horrible reactions from all of the vaccines, from Pfizer, from J&J, from Moderna, and the Chinese one, and some other pharmaceutical company that I don't know, into the tens, if not hundreds of thousands. And these vaccines are still being pushed. And ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and Regeneron and all of the proven safe therapeutics are being vilified. And the only reason they're being vilified is because Donald Trump came out and early on, remember, when either he had it or he had COVID back in the early days of it, and he was pushing and said, these are great. What did they say? Oh, Donald Trump wants you to take Lysol. Donald Trump wants you to take a fish tank cleaner. And that was it. And then after that, the medical board said, if any doctor dares to prescribe these drugs, which are legitimate drugs, they're not horse paste, they're not horse dewormer, they're not fish tank cleaner, they're meant to be a therapeutic and antiviral drug. If anybody dares to prescribe this, it'll be you might risk your medical license. That to me is absolute, that is totalitarianism right there. And the hiding of data is totalitarianism. And all of this reeks to freaking high heaven. So you want to talk about conspiracy theories, let's talk about conspiracy theories, but look at what they're doing right in front of our faces. So this is just absolutely, again, it's a crime against humanity. Hundreds of thousands of people have died needlessly because of malfeasance and handling of this thing, and there should be not just prison sentences, but I'm talking the gallows for a lot of different people. But what are the odds of that happening? Slim and none.
Yeah, what he said.
What I said, baby doll. All right. Anyway, I think anything else, my friend?
No, I'm all talked out. I've been jabbering like a fool for the last hour and a half, so I don't want to
torture people with
any more of it.
That is our stock in trade.
Yeah, that's a good point.
For CBD, this is JJ Sefton for the Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks podcast for May 18th of 2022. Thanks for listening. We will see you very soon with a part two coming up very soon, maybe in the next day or so. So we'll have a double header. So you're thrilled to our dulcet tones. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks for listening, folks.